There is fresh heartbreak tonight. Wailing in the streets for a life cut down by bullets. This was 2:30 in the afternoon near Victoria Park and O'Connor. Two men were walking and someone started firing at them. One neighbor says they heard so many gunshots it sounded like a jackhammer. Understandably, the men ran. Inspector Jim Gattell says that's when they were shot.
We can say that this is a street gang related shooting, and we believe that the two individuals who were shot here today were targeted.
Now, one of the men fell to the ground and never got back up. He was killed. A woman who presented herself as a family member gave this crushing interview to our sister station, CP24.
And now I have to go to a funeral and watch his little daughter cry because someone took her daddy. Toronto, it's time to unite as one. Stop killing us. Stop killing each other.
We heard tears, but also frustration from neighbors.
We are tired. This is sick, and housing doesn't give a damn.
Well, this looks to have happened at the edge of a Toronto community housing development. The other man shot today will survive his injuries. Police haven't shared suspect descriptions yet, but that could be coming soon from what they've told us. There may be a getaway car to tell you about as well. So this case right away screamed gang shooting to the police. What we don't know, if there's anything to link this shooting to any others from this week. Are we looking at a case of two gangs going back and forth, an eye for an eye sort of thing? We can't tell you that right now.
Yeah, and we may not be able to tell you that. It didn't seem like the police chief was very keen on the idea of naming people in these particular cases. I heard Nia Singh talking about this earlier on More in the Morning, and he outlined sort of a 10-point plan to all of this. And one of those points has to do with naming who these gangs are. I think you have to give people an understanding of who we're dealing with, what they're fighting over, what kind of territorial wars we're looking at. The idea that cops can show up at a scene like this and within minutes, and I mean, all relative, but I mean, let's say 10, 20, 30 minutes, can say, yep, this is a gang shooting.
And we don't know if that's based on the kind of weapon that was used, if they knew the people who were shot, that they were had been on police radar already. They aren't telling us that stuff yet.
Whatever box they ticked, think about that for a second. This is a Toronto police force that holds back a lot of information most of the time when any kind of crime is committed. I think we can all attest to that working in this business. When you have a situation where cops show up and basically say, yep, this has got all the marks of the gang shooting, and if it is, we knew who the victim was, we know what the weapons are, that's pretty terrifying to me. And that means, to me, they've got to share more about this with the general public so we know what we're up against here. Because this is, we're all together on this, right? And if you want people to be attached to these type of stories, it can't just be something that's so distant, we don't touch it, we don't feel it. You know, this is a community housing complex, but we should care. We should give a damn. Somebody's life was lost. You heard a family member in tears. You heard a resident saying that, you know, nobody's protecting us. Nobody cares about us. The way you get a society together and to care is to have them understand the narrative all the better by providing those details. And I don't think it's going to make people into martyrs. I don't believe that.
I don't think we've heard the reporting. And even, you know, I think last summer we had a similar thing where we did see some gang violence flare up. And it was reporting from, you know, from news outlets that told us it was, you know, gang X versus gang Y. That wasn't anything that came from the police. And we did have Haley Cooper at police headquarters today asking the chief about Nia Singh's suggestion, why not do this? And he said, you know, basically, I'm not going to give these people oxygen. The people in those communities know the gangs that are operating there. I don't need to say it standing in front of a bunch of microphones. They're very well aware of who's operating in their communities and are afraid of them already. And that, you know, this naming them doesn't do anything to help that situation.
And that's my question is would it end up giving this gang or this specific person more notoriety? Would it, you know, would it embolden this person? That's the kind of question that you have to tussle with, depending on how much information you give. But I think as journalists, as you said, we all have this struggle with crime reporting where so, so little information is provided. And it is different in the United States and different jurisdictions compared to what we get
in
Canada. Yeah,
I would even say it's different based on what kind of organized crime you're talking about. These are same police forces that have no problem talking about mafias. They have no problem talking about individual bike gangs and naming them. You know, they don't seem to have a problem in that case giving some sort of notoriety or name at the very least to those type of organizations. What's the difference here?
I feel like when there is something to present to the public in terms of arrests having been made and like a dent in that criminal organization, that's when they feel comfortable doing it. I don't feel that they're very often saying, hey, we're looking into this gang. That doesn't happen.
No, and I think it should. I honestly think it should. Like, there's somebody's picture that's been flashed up on the screen the last little while, somebody they're looking for, not in connection with this shooting. It's hard to keep track. I know you need a scorecard. That's how sad this city has become. But, you know, is that individual in a gang? What gang are they with? Who are their affiliates? What area of the town are they known to frequent? What's their turf? Tell us that.
But what does that change? Yeah.
It changes the connection that people have. There is a distance people still feel to this. If you get enough voters, if you get enough people angry and upset because they understand the narrative further than they currently do, you're going to have change. Every single panelist that has come in here, and I've had the displeasure of having to talk about this every single day, because I don't want to have to talk about people getting capped in our city, but that's the truth of the matter as to what's going on. Every one of them said to what Trevor just said minutes ago. You know, we talk about this and then it falls flat come election time, or there's a new change in government. That's because people feel disconnected to this story. We are all really good at our jobs. The two of you more so than me, I can tell you that. You're great storytellers at things. But when you can't paint that full picture to people, don't expect the audience to be able to say, okay, now I get it, because that's not the world they live in. The more detail you give people, it's human nature. They'll feel more attached to their story and more attached to the community.
But if the shooting at the Raptors parade and the stampede that followed didn't galvanize all of Toronto around the issue of gun violence and around paying attention to it, what will? That's my question. I'm not sure that that changes it.
Because
that
the assumption, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off. No, seriously.
It's all good. Go ahead.
But the assumption is that most people think, okay, that's a problem that came from another part of the town into the city. It was a one-off, one day only. I was there. People criticized me for talking too much about it. And I was literally on the ground broadcasting while people were getting stampeded, while a shooting had just happened. And the criticism was, just get on with it. We want to talk about the parade. That is a society that is disconnected from the reality. That's the problem.
But I think it's like anything. It doesn't matter to you until it happens to you. It's and we have had a number of these in the last number of years. The Danforth shooting was one. The Eaton Center shooting was one. Once they are places that mean something to you, mm-hmm. then you will care. If you don't live in that, and we talked about this last week, funnily enough, when I was in here with you and I forget who your co-host was, but I was thinking, oh my gosh, I'm back here and we're talking about the same thing. You know, if you don't live in that you, I think it's easy for so many people to just act like this does not happen.
And you nailed it. But because Toronto is the you, we all live here. But the problem is we don't know those elements. We don't know that narrative because it's foreign to us. And when you put up a wall and you don't have information, people aren't going to go look for that. They're not going to be able to find it anywhere. It's important. Detail's important.
And this is what Trevor was kind of getting towards as well, is that the way our political system is set up, it's not really set up to address these systemic issues that require these long-term programs and funding, because it doesn't fit in an election cycle. It doesn't give you that payoff.
But all of these things do involve us, and they do involve our community.
Absolutely.
They involve our tax dollars, if you want to put the dollars and cents of it. So, yeah, we've all got skin in the game, so tell us what the game is. You know? At least that's my feeling. I'm guessing that might be why Nia put it in his points today.
Probably.
As to why he thinks it's a good idea. And I back his play on that 100%. What else is happening?
Well, I wanted to talk about this news conference that the chief
sure.
had, because we were a little surprised. I think when we got this notice this morning, we were saying the chief already summoned reporters to headquarters on Monday. He is talking to reporters a lot more than he used to. But on a holiday Monday at the sort of tail end of a bunch of violence, it made sense on Monday. Today, we were thinking he's going to have something significant to say, to be doing this twice in a matter of 5 days. So you figured that he wants to try to communicate with Torontonians who he said are sleeping in bathtubs at night, anxious to step outside because they're so afraid of being shot. There was a maddening lack of anything new in this news conference from the chief. So our reporter, Haley Cooper, was there, as I mentioned. She was pressing the chief about what the plan is to deal with gun violence, especially for people living in pockets of the city that unfortunately see more of this gun violence. They're sick of lip service being paid to their safety.
I want to be very clear that the Toronto Police Service has, in fact, had an action plan. We have seized 536 guns to date. We're continuing to make arrests. We've laid thousands of charges. We've arrested hundreds of people. The street gang issue is alive and well.
And we did hear the chief admit that something does have to give when it comes to dealing with gangs.
There is going to be a change and a shift in what we need to do to have a stronger focus on street gangs. And I'm working with my team right now, and we're developing a plan. And that plan, it will take place sooner rather than later.
So the chief also used this news conference to talk about the role that courts have to play in all this. Like, maybe fewer people facing gun charges should be allowed out on bail while they wait for their cases to be heard.
We do our job, and then we come in for the next shift, and buddy's back out again. So you can see how on both ends, it becomes frustrating from all aspects and all people.
And this is something that's been talked about a lot, I think, especially last summer. It was something that was addressed as well when we saw this rise in gun crime. The chief says that right now there are 326 people charged in Toronto that are on bail on gun charges. So we kind of, I wasn't too sure what to do with that number. Our legal analyst Ed Perci doesn't know that the number is actually all that helpful in and of itself.
It turns out that a lot of these shootings that we're seeing this summer and in previous summers are being done by people who are out on bail. Then I think there's a legitimate question to ask and say, you know, what are we doing wrong with the bail system that we're not getting the right people to be kept in while the other people are released? But I'm not sure that that's the answer.
Now, the province threw money at this last summer and pledged money for stuff like special teams at courthouses to deal with gun crimes. Perci was asked if he's seen a difference since then. He says, no, not at all. Nia Singh, who's also a criminal lawyer, says that he has seen more difference, that he does think that there's more follow-up happening. I mean, it's completely anecdotal for two different people.
Depends on who you talk to. Yeah.
So, that there might be more follow-up happening to making sure that people on bail are sticking to the rules, but it's hard to tell.
Yeah, let me get back to your first point about the police chief. It's interesting because I was all over him on Tuesday talking about how this police chief seemed out of touch during his news conference that day, how he wasn't addressing the real issues about the judiciary and the court system, the bail system. I'm not taking credit for this by any stretch, but I think that was a criticism that was echoed by a lot of people, where he came out and basically said on Tuesday, well, this isn't Toronto and this isn't representative. Stuff we had heard before. Today felt like a bit of a mulligan, a bit of a do-over. That's kind of the impression I got, where we didn't get anything new, really, unless I'm missing something. No. I don't think we got anything new, but it felt like, well, let's try to change the messaging because the first time around, that didn't seem to resonate with anyone.
Yeah, I also think he was trying to point out when he said we can't arrest our way out of this, that it has to be a bigger conversation than what are the police doing. It needs to involve other governments, community groups, and community organizations. And that means, like we talked about earlier, funding for prevention and for diversion from the gangs.
And I think some of it also comes from the rank and file, because they're frustrated. There's a lot of frustration going on with officers who are putting people behind or trying to put people behind bars only to see the same people come out all over again.
And he said the community's frustrated because they're working with police. They're reporting things that, you know, are suspicious or dangerous. And they're, you know, he said that the attitude is, well, why should we help you? Why should we put ourselves in a vulnerable position if these people are going to be back on the street in a matter of hours or days?
Yeah, because it means, you know, you've got to step up. You know, when it comes to the community, if you're stepping up and you're putting your own neck on the line, only to know that the same person you helped put behind bars is living next door to you all over again, chances are you're not going to do that again.
No.
And you're probably going to have some words that are going to be flown in your direction. If it's only words, you're lucky. That's the but that's the reality of the world they live in. And that's, you know, until we get real about it, we're not going to change a damn thing. All right. I didn't know that Premier Ford could bump himself past the traffic, but he has today. Tells you the exact environment that we're dealing with on today's show. Been a busy summer, to be sure. Siobhan Morris is here from our newsroom. Marika Walsh is co-hosting with me here on The Rush. We will continue her views on the news as we continue here on The Rush. You're listening to The Rush. Ryan Doyle, Marika Walsh with you. Siobhan Morris is here from our newsroom, updating us on the big stories of the day. Yeah, Doug Ford, the Premier, making some comments, or at least doubling down on past comments.
You'll remember a few weeks ago, the Premier set off a minor firestorm on this radio station. I know I wasn't alone when my mouth literally fell open hearing Doug Ford speak this way about a mental health patient.
This nutcase. And then they let him loose out on the street.
So the guy he's talking about is Zibin Kong, the man who took off from CAMH, likely to China, at the start of July. Remember, he had killed his roommate some years ago with a meat cleaver. Now, because of mental illness, Kong was found not criminally responsible. This sparked some pretty passionate discussion on The Rush the day that Ford made those comments. Some of our listeners had applauded the Premier for talking like your buddy down at the coffee shop. Others said that kind of language is hurtful and it stigmatizes mental illness and anyone who might try to get help. So today we gave the Premier a chance at a do-over if he wanted it. We heard a lot of pundits that day say that, you know, maybe the Premier had been rash and would say something different if he had more time to think about it. Turns out no.
Just imagine if it was your daughter that this animal chopped up.
So we had nutcase, and now he's calling this guy an animal. So the Premier just is doubling down on this.
We have to have tougher laws in this country. We got to put these people away. And if they have mental health issues, they can be dealt with in jail. Simple as that.
I know you'll have a lot of mental health advocates say that some people, you know, their mental health issues cannot well be serviced or cannot be well serviced in a facility like a prison. Now, in the background of all this is the province has this week inserted itself into a third-party review of CAMH that had already, you know, been promised. The government wants a hand, understandably, in picking the people who make up the group who are going to take a look at the CAMH policies after a bunch of patients slipped away this summer, not only Zip and Kong.
Yeah, listen, I think that the system is in need of a review. I wouldn't argue with that. I think in this situation, when you're dealing with something that is very nuanced in terms of mental health, rhetoric is one of those things that can easily win the day. And, you know, we've been watching the text board this afternoon. I would say that that rhetoric that the premier is using is effective. It has resonance with people out there. That's not to say that the issue still isn't nuanced and it should be looked at with a very critical expert eye, as opposed to somebody just, you know, trying to make it a more of a political point.
Yeah. And I think the premier, one of the premier's clips that we just played sort of suggests that these people who are found not criminally responsible don't spend any time in some sort of lockup situation. They're not going to prison with general population, but they certainly are treated. And they, as Christy Blatchford said, the ones she looked at actually spent more time in custody than if they had just been in prison.
Yeah. And I mean, again, he's going to win political points. This kind of goes back to a Doug Ford we haven't seen speak like this in quite some time. So this will rev the engines of people who want to hear him talk like this. Again, I also think that their system, yeah, system's not perfect. When you have a guy who's committed something like this, that's able to get on a plane, I think we could all say, well, wait a minute, something's not right there. Let's look back and figure out how to fix it. I don't think the rhetoric helps the discussion in any capacity. More information on this individual in Florida.
It's the start and there's more to come. So a federal court has unsealed more than 2,000 pages of documents on Jeffrey Epstein. It's a chilling picture of how hundreds of teenage girls and young women who claim they were trafficked for sex by Epstein and his alleged madam. The thought here is that she had reached out to these women. We've heard a little bit of them being approached in clubs and on schoolyards. Included in this document is a picture of Prince Andrew, an actual physical picture of the Duke of York with his arm around the waist of a 16-year-old girl. I can tell you, I looked at this photo. It made me real uncomfortable. He is holding this girl in a way that you do not touch a 16-year-old girl if you are a grown man. It just, something about it feels really wrong. This now grown woman, but was 16 at the time, claims in this deposition that these documents reveal say that she was lent out to the prince as a sex slave. The girl also claims that all of this started for her when she was working at a locker room at Mar-a-Lago, Donald Trump's resort in Florida, when she was approached by Epstein's madam to start working as his masseuse, and things just spiraled out of there. There are some big names in this report, including Donald Trump, Bill Clinton, Al Gore. Their names are mentioned, but there's the assertion here that there's no sense that any of these three men had any idea what Jeffrey Epstein was up to. However, the girl's lawyer who's interviewed in the deposition says there were a great many people who did know and just let this happen, that he was hiding in plain sight.
Yeah, I just looked at the picture of Prince Andrew and this young lady. You're absolutely right.
Right?
That is just disgusting.
Ugh.
Yeah. You don't, like, the hand around the waist, the bare midriff, and it's just not appropriate in any capacity.
I haven't seen it yet, so.
Yeah, I could probably just save you that. Just take our word on that.
I'll take your word for it, and I will not look it up.
I hope that every powerful person that, you know, is looked into in this situation, whether it's Prince Andrew, whether it's Bill Clinton, whether it's Donald Trump, the law should be blind to power in these situations.
You would hope. You would hope. But I feel like there's been so much evidence already with this case that has not been the case.
And what about this woman, this madam, this arranger, who, how do you sleep at night when that's your gig?
So I will be curious to hear the other part of the documents that have not come out, which are her deposition of her being interviewed. So this is all part of a legal case, a civil suit that was brought against her that was settled out of court. And we'll have to see what she had to say in response to some of these allegations.
I'm also curious to how these other high-powered people respond, right? How do they...
Well, so far, it's no
comment.
I wasn't there.
Buckingham Palace has to say something at some point, don't they?
Maybe. Again, I feel power, right?
They do. I think, yeah, an entity.
Whether they will,
yeah,
it's another question.
This is an abduction story?
It's very weird. So yesterday afternoon, police in Burlington got calls about a man who was just walking down the street near Guelph Line in the 403, and then out of nowhere, a bunch of guys jumped out of a car and a minivan, so two vehicles. They chased this guy down, beat him up, throw him in a van, and take off. So police were worried, of course, about how this guy might be doing, whether he was safe, and they called this an abduction. They found the guy this morning. The thing is, he doesn't want to answer any of their questions.
Huh.
He's physically fine, didn't have to go to the hospital. So whether, you know, we really don't know if this, what happened, if this was like a prank or, you know, a debt that needed to be settled, who knows?
He's just not talking.
He's just not talking.
So I guess they just
refusing to speak to police, and like they also noted that he wanted to remain anonymous. I don't know why he'd be named. Doesn't make sense to me, but that's what they said.
All right. Good for you, anonymous abducted guy who's no longer abducted.
I hope he's okay.
Yeah. I hope it's just one of those like misunderstood like bachelor party pranks. Like on a Thursday afternoon, it seems somewhat unlikely, but maybe. Maybe.
All I got was a crappy motel in Niagara Falls.
Bunch of guys playing poker. Capital of the world.
It's not really the bachelor party capital of the world, though.
I grew up in Niagara, and I would disagree. Although I'd say there's way more bachelorette parties than bachelor parties.
All I'm saying is they could have got me a hotel as opposed to a motel.
Are they listening right now? Probably. They tune in?
You all know who you are. Could have done better for me, right? Right.
Did you do better for them?
I did. I think I've taken every one of them to some sort of nice locale like Las Vegas or what have you.
Wow.
Yeah, right? You really got undersold.
Like really undersold. Yeah. Like I'm at the back of Fallsview in a motel. I didn't even have cable. What's going on with the government and drug prices?
Well, the federal government has called this the biggest move to make Canadian prescription drugs more affordable in a generation. Today, the health minister was showing off changes to patent and medicine regulations. So a board will look at whether the cost of a drug lines up with the benefits it brings to the people who take them. They'll also change which countries Canada price checks against. They'll stick to countries that are similar to Canada in terms of population, economy, and the way that we approach healthcare because we weren't doing that. Right now, Canada is the third most expensive place in the world for patented drugs. The government figures that this new setup could save Canadians $13 million over the next decade.
That seems fair.
That seems fair.
Yeah, it's a good review to do.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense to me. What's going on with the homeless?
We have two new government reports that suggest a rising number of newcomers to Canada are ending up homeless and relying on shelters. Now, this is not all that surprising if you've been paying attention to what's been happening in Toronto's homeless shelters especially, where we know that a report that came out in November found that 40% of the people in our shelters were refugee and asylum seekers. So that's all not all that surprising. These studies look nationally, though, and they say that between 2005 and 2016, there was an increase in refugees using shelters. In 2016, there were 2,000 refugees sleeping in shelters. That's double the number from just 2 years before. So I think there's ongoing concerns of how that needs to be addressed going forward, mm-hmm. and making sure the resources are there for people when they come to Canada to get them set up in a way that they can, you know, make a living and find a home.
Yeah. I mean, the way I look at this is pretty straightforward. We had a federal government who overpromised and didn't plan properly. That's what it comes down to. We had, I don't mind, of course, doing our part as a world citizen, as a global citizen, but do people a favor and have a plan in place as to where these people are going to go. Make sure things are set up so that people don't have to rely on our shelter system, because it becomes a burden for everybody else who's trying to get into our shelter system that's already here. That's not a solid plan to say, oh, well, municipalities, you deal with it. You'll figure it out. I'm sure you guys are good. This has been bad from the beginning of what this government's tried to do.
Yeah, and they say that it's about speeding up the processing, right? So that people who are accepted get these programs once they're accepted, mm-hmm. and those who aren't are removed, but it has been slow to move on.
Can we get to the poop?
Yeah, we want to do the bird poop story, right?
Very quickly.
So I've heard stories about like this on Cops, but
On Cops? You're the last person on earth I would...
I listened to a podcast about Cops, so that's okay. How I'm going to qualify.
Fair enough.
So a guy in Georgia was pulled over for speeding. The cop noticed there were two white spots on the hood of his car, and he was just convinced that this was cocaine. Why it would be on the hood, I have no idea. So the guy told the police it was bird poop he tried to wash off. The cops didn't believe him, did a field test, and said, that's cocaine there on your hood. They charged the guy with possession of drugs. They sent this stuff to a lab for a more thorough examination. It turns out he was right. It was bird poop.
Wow.
Was he sniffing the bird poop?
I don't want to try that. You want to try that? No, whatever. You have a fun weekend.
It was college. It was a bet.
But can you imagine if that was you and you're trying to convince them it's bird poo and they don't, like, how do you convince them?
Why would you have to? What backwater town in Georgia is this a priority? Siobhan Morse, always great stuff. Thank you so much.